This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
And now it's time for the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show with Score Morning Show co-host Mully from the Mully and Haw Show, Bears long snapping iron man Patrick Manley, and Score football expert and former NFL player Anthony Heron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans, always live on the free Odyssey app. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers online sportsbook app today.
Oh, yes, indeed. It is the pregame show here on The Score. And we have an actual pregame show. We've got a full 3 hours of pregame. It's been rushed with the schedule so crazy. A Thursday and a Monday. And now we're back. Noon Sundays the rest of the way, unless the Bears are flexed. And if they play the way they played on Monday for the rest of the year, I got a feeling they will be flexed. So the question to begin with, gentlemen, and Patrick, you can take it first. What are we going to see today? Is it going to look much like Monday?
All right, here it is. I have my fingers crossed that we get to see what we saw last week. That's what I'm hoping for. There's a whole lot of hope here, man. This whole week, it felt so good last week, Mully, to have the post game with you and have those positive energy, the positive vibes. I've gone through this entire week feeling the same way. I was on with Spiegel and Parkins, and I'm talking playoffs. No, I'm just kidding. You know, I'm talking about possibly getting back to 4-4. No, it's just I
you kidding me?
But here's the thing, guys. This is what I expect. I expect them to play the same way they did last week with the physicality they played with. It's on tape. That standard is set. They've shown it. They can coach it. They can expect it. You know, we've talked about the talent deficiency they have compared to other teams, but the way they played, the way they flew around, the physical nature they played with, I expect to see that. Does that lead to a win? I hope. Like I said, I hope. I have my fingers crossed. But I think with that physicality they showed last week, let's just keep that going. And if you can do that and you're undermanned, then you can possibly eke out a win again.
And I would say that's probably been the element of the Bears, that physicality you talk about, Patrick, that maybe we're starting to see that we can count on that on a more consistent basis than we can some of the execution. You know, some of those flaws that show up at times and all phases with this young Bears team, with this inexperienced Bears team. But they play their tails off. You know, they fly around, they play hard, and that physicality certainly shows up in the run game on offense. We're seeing an improving run defense from the Bears also. So all those things end up mattering. And there's certainly a level of execution that goes into those elements where you do need to execute your run fits well to defend the run better. And you do need to execute hitting your landmarks as run blockers, you know, to run the ball as effectively as the Bears have with the top rushing attack in the National Football League. Those things being said, I think that talent deficiency that you referenced, that's still going to be there against a number of opponents. It doesn't mean they can't defeat some of those opponents who maybe have a more physically gifted roster than they do. But I'm still, you know, the main word I've used a lot with you guys this season is patience. I'm still taking a very patient approach with this thing. I think that it's fun to see that, and it's good to see those results, you know, come out on the scoreboard as well. But, you know, through my lens, I'm still very focused on the, you know, the aggregation of marginal gains, because I think it's unlikely we're going to see a several score victory become a consistent thing for this current Bears squad.
The danger of where they were at on Monday is they had started stacking losses, and we've seen that happen to teams. That's an awful position to be in, because you do know they have a talent deficiency. You do know that one of the things they have to have is self-belief in order to be able to get through it. And you worry when you see a team starting to put together loss after loss that's the way the season's going to go. So to go into New England and to turn it around, they were 8.5-point dogs. They're 9.5-point dogs now. It opened at 10, and it's down to 9.5. They got a half a point by that performance. But you know, the question, I suppose, is how does that win age? And that's kind of what we're going to find out beginning today. Was that them catching the bad team at the right time? I mean, how good are the New England Patriots? I don't really care. It was a great win, and it was glorious, and it was good to see them win in every element of the game, all three phases, against the guy who's considered the greatest coach in NFL history. So that was great. Now, though, you did get the attention of Dallas. Now, I know Ezekiel Elliott is going to be out because he's got a knee injury. They've got the bye week. You know, the formula for beating them, maybe the run defense is benefited by him being out. Now, he's a, you know, Tony Pollard has got a lot of yards. I know guys, I talked to a guy this week who thinks that he's a better player at this stage of his career than Ezekiel Elliott, but he's still more of a third down guy than a first and second. And when you think about the run fits and the defense they play, it'll be aided by Ezekiel Elliott out on first and second down.
Yeah,
it certainly will.
Yes, it will. And Tony Pollard's going to be interesting because he hasn't been a workhorse back. You know, that's been the big question. So we'll see how he does with that. And then Malik Davis, I believe they brought up as the rookie out of Florida. They speak highly about him. You know, I think they'll stick with the run. I think Kellen Moore, their offensive coordinator, likes to do what he does offensively with the just a pure pro-style offense. But they really like to run the ball down there. But this is going to be interesting to see how the Bears respond after that game, Mully, like you're talking about. There are good vibes in Halas Hall all week, right? Practice probably felt better. Meetings felt better. But you have to go out there and do it again. You have to go out there and prove it. And they have a fierce opponent. This is a very good Dallas team they've got to go against and go out there and execute the same way they did. And I think they're outmanned like they were against the Patriots. But can they go do it? I don't know. And I think you're right. This is just going to be interesting to see really what this Bears team is. If they go out there and beat Dallas, let's just say if they go beat Dallas, then I'm going to feel a whole lot different about them. I guarantee you they're going to feel different about themselves. They're going to have a little more self-belief. They had to go into some of these games, and they know. They look at the paper, and they're like, wow, they have so-and-so, and we only have so-and-so. They have so-and-so, and we only have so-and-so. But they've gone out there. They had a big win last week, and this is a great test for them to go against this Dallas team. And it's going to be interesting to see what, with not having Ezekiel Elliott, what that means to this Cowboys team. But it doesn't scare me that much because I think Tony Pollard is pretty darn good running back.
I'm going to be late to the party as far as any thoughts of this current Bears squad having any real postseason potential. But that being said, I'm very open to being proven wrong on that, and it'll be very fun if they can go about proving me wrong. But all the individual pieces of this roster, you know, whether it's the pieces who definitively will be a part of this thing for the next few seasons, at least because they're on their rookie deal still, and because they're guys who the franchise is hoping for greatness from, or even if it's these guys on the prove it deals, you know, is an Equanimeous St. Brown playing himself into some role on the Bears moving forward? Is Dante Pettis playing himself into some role? Morrow playing himself into, so, you know, I think there's guys who are having that opportunity, who are showing flashes of that potential to still be around here and be a part of this thing. But in the end, You're certainly going to need more competitive depth, top to bottom on the roster. You're going to need more complete pieces, more true playmakers. That was what gave me pause. You know, I told you guys last week, I thought the Monday night game would certainly be more competitive than Vegas might have even thought it would. I thought the Bears, you know, would likely end up losing that game because they don't have touchdown scores. And they had begun to mount drives. And that those marginal gains we're talking about, where whether it was the, you know, the New York game, the Minnesota game, even that Washington game. The Washington game was the most offensively consistent game that they had played up to that point, but they weren't putting the rock in the end zone. And that's what you got to be able to do in the league to you know, prove yourself amongst the best offenses. And the Bears finally got to a point where they were putting the rock in the end zone. And so that's one of those other – it's not a leaps and bounds game because we've seen them begin to move the ball better. Now they got into that red area and they got inside the 10 and inside the 5 and they were able to punch it in. Can you make that a consistent thing? Do some consistent touchdown scorers emerge that now put them into a different category? Even David Montgomery hasn't been a consistent touchdown scorer at this point in his career, and certainly none of their pass receivers have. So there's, you know, you keep stacking performances, you keep stacking gains, then, you know, maybe the wins start to come consistently there. But to me, I'm taking a very sort of marginal and patient approach in how I'm evaluating that.
Yeah, and I think that's hugely important, especially with the quarterback. And maybe when we talk about Justin Fields, and every week we talk about Justin Fields, he is their primary weapon on offense, and they're leaning into his ability to run the football. And it was amazing, really, to see how they leaned into it with what it was, a 10 called runs for the quarterback in the victory last week. And, you know, it's great. And I think it helps him become better as a quarterback. I know that sounds crazy, but just watching him, it seems like his confidence when he runs, he knows how good he is. Sometimes he'll run into a sack. I understand that. But now you're facing a Dallas opponent that is a really good, really fast defense. Is it sustainable to continue to call 10 running plays for the quarterback? And I mean, the argument would be that it's the only thing that's sustainable. They got a couple good running backs. They run the jet sweep, but he's the special in that running offense. Do you expect them to lean into it the way they did last week? Patrick, I don't know that anybody thought they were just going to do all these, you know, quarterback runs. We wanted to see it, but we didn't know if it would work or not.
Yeah, I thought it was a brilliant game plan. I think you continue doing it because I like the way he ran the ball and would slide or get out of bounds or whatever he was doing not to take the big hit. I think he's very dynamic with the ball in his hands, obviously, when he scrambles, but I think he runs the ball well, kind of as a running quarterback or running back, you know what I mean, from the shotgun. I think he's excellent. I also think it helps him get into the flow of the game. And you talked about it, Malay. I think he gets a little swagger. Like when he gets up, he gets a little shimmy. You know, he's like, he feels like he's into the game. He's like, all right, I made a guy miss and I, you know, outran this guy. I'm into the game. Hey, I'm the best athlete out here. I'm the best player out here. Let's get going. He builds his confidence. I love it. I think they need to continue doing it. And I do think it helped that they went back and watched the Ravens game and saw the Ravens the way they, you know, how they ran the ball against the Patriots. And I think you can continue going forward by building off these runs. You can do different formations. You can run the similar runs, but just kind of formation them different so the guys get used to the same blocking schemes, the same execution, the same runs. But you can formationally change it up, and I think it's a great thing. I would love to see 10-plus quarterback runs, and I think that's what's best for this team right now. And maybe that's what Justin Fields turns into be as an NFL quarterback. He turns into a little bit more of a Lamar Jackson, a Josh Allen, where he is going to run the ball more and use his arm as well in the passing game. So I love it. I thought it was a great game plan. Obviously, it worked, and I would love to see more.
And it's a way to take the starts out of an elite pass rush that Dallas has as well. You know, you sap a little bit of their aggression when you have when they have to account for the mobility of the quarterback, and not only in a scramble situation, but in called QB runs, because now you know it's not only a team that's going to have sort of the traditional amount of blockers available, and so you got to hit that blocking surface, and somebody's going to be free to flow to the ball if everyone does their job. Now you have to account for an extra gap, for an extra blocking surface that the QB as a runner forces you to account for as an opposing defense. And when you got pass rushers who want to get up into the backfield who want to have that blood in their fingertips where they're just kind of in seek and destroy mode, you got to account for the QB. Now it does take a little bit of your aggression, a little bit of that penetration you're looking for into the backfield. It negates it some, as long as you're not getting into predictable downs and distances. And the thing I've been telling people this about Justin Fields since he was coming out in the draft, he's best in a called run scenario because of the fact that he prefers to operate within the design of the play. He's not like where he's different. You know, Lamar Jackson is a, you know, just a more sudden athlete as a runner anyway. Justin Fields is an exceptional runner as a quarterback. But as far as the improvisational end of things, Lamar Jackson is more comfortable improvising than Justin Fields is. Kyler Murray is better improvising than Justin Fields is. Justin Fields, if you call him into movement, if you call him into movement of the pocket, you call him into run game, that's where he not only is most effective, but frankly, the entire offense now is set up where perhaps he's not taking the big hits in the way that he does when he's scrambling and he's, you know, he's trying to do that awkward spin move and he's, you know, exposing his rib cage to people and uncertain about when and how to slide and all those other things. You call him into it, it affects the defense. I think it goes advantage Bears offense in those scenarios as well. And it doesn't necessarily have to be 10 to 12 times per game. That can be just game plan dependent on the opponent you're facing, but Dallas does strike me as a team where the QB run play will be effective for the Bears offense, not only with its productivity, but with the mental effect that it has on the Cowboys defense and their pass rush.
So Monday night, we have the unexpected victory. You know, the Bears expected it, but I don't think anyone in the nation was really anticipating it, and they did a great job. Everybody's feeling good. The positivity was through the roof. By Wednesday, they traded Robert Quinn. And it happened in real time. Roquan is at the podium. He breaks down. He got emotional. Apparently, they're good friends. He's a little brother type relationship, and he was damaged by it. I mean, he was really bummed. And you wonder, was he thinking about his own Bears career kind of mortality when that moment hit him? But whatever it might be, one of your best players, a guy who set a single season record for sacks. I get it. 32 years old. They traded him. How does that hit the locker room? Is there any impact from that moment as we look at lining up on Sunday or out of sight, out of mind? Which is it?
My opinion is the way this team has been, the way Ryan, you got a new regime, right? So I think the guys know that this is a rebuild. This is going to happen. It's been talked about potentially Robert Quinn being traded, Roquan Smith, players being traded. It stinks when it finally happens, but I think they understand where they are. It's not like they're a 500 team and they're hoping to maybe make the playoffs and all of a sudden you trade this guy and it's like, all right, the GM and the coach have given up on us. I don't think they feel that way. I think they understand that, listen, we are a young team. We are rebuilding. We got something for him. It stinks he's gone. I understand that because you become great friends with these guys. You see how good of a player he's been, and it's hard, but I do think they understand. But that was kind of interesting and neat to see Roquan react the way he did, just because that means he really cares. And but it's, I think, something that they understood that it's going to happen. And I don't think it's going to cause that big of an issue with the locker room. I think in the long run, it's really going to help him because the young guys get more playing time. But as an older guy, if I was an older guy in the locker room, I would understand it. As a younger guy, it's always shocking. But again, I think it's something that they knew potentially could happen with a couple of these players.
And to see, you know, Roquan Smith's emotional reaction to it, I think to some extent it's probably not only it's in some ways maybe even beneficial to folks outside the locker room, because I think the conversation around Roquan Smith has gotten, to me, kind of far afield, where there's not an appreciation for what a great player he's been up to this point in his career, and like so many things where it's just, you know, every game is a referendum on whether you're amazing or whether you're awful, and there's such limited in between here. You know, where Roquan Smith has been an elite football player throughout the entirety of his time with the Chicago Bears. Does that mean he deserves to be the number one played defender in NFL history or the highest paid inside linebacker ever? Probably not. You know, in my mind, he's still got time to prove that throughout this season, but he's been elite. He continues to play at an elite level. you know, maybe the guy who's going to get the biggest deal for a defender ever is going to be on the opposing sideline today in Dallas. But Micah Parsons early in his career, so it's not a decision the Cowboys have to make right now. That being said, it does seem like, you know, either Roquan made his money today or Roquan's absolute trash. And I don't see a lot of nuance to the Roquan Smith conversation. And, you know, people seeing that in what has been a stressful offseason for him, I'm sure, and a productive season for him here in the midst of a year where the team goals from the front office don't necessarily appear to be where they're trying to achieve at a high level, because we don't see them resourcing the roster at a high level. So who knows all those machinations for Roquan Smith, but I do think there's probably something beneficial just to the outward perspective on him that folks are seeing how deeply he cares, not only about himself and his contract, but about his teammates and this team as a whole.
All right, we're going to head down to Dallas. We're going to bring in Calvin Watkins. He covers the Cowboys for the Dallas Morning News. And we'll ask him those pertinent questions. Micah Parsons is having an unbelievable year, but he's got a sore shoulder. Is there any chance he doesn't play? Did he sleep poorly last night? That would be a help. We'll ask Calvin.
Have a runny nose.
Yeah, there you go. Whatever it takes, we'll ask Calvin those questions when we come back. You're listening to the Pregame Show. On the Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think, you know, you can see Chicago in this last game starting to lean more towards that. You know, I think when you look at the history of, you know, Luke Getsy and what I think they were trying to do early, and I think every first-year coordinator goes through this. You know, and this is October. You know, this is when you really figure out who you are and your ability to grow. And I thought that they really took a big step as a football team Monday night.
The pregame show here on The Score, and you just heard the voice there of Mike McCarthy. I believe he's the interim Dallas head coach. He's holding that spot until Sean Payton takes it. No, I'm just making a joke, a bad joke. That was for the benefit of Calvin Watkins, he of the Dallas Morning News, and he joins us now on The Score hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Calvin, yeah, I think the Bears, Matt Eberflus, you remember him. He was he's an old friend. He's more popular here in Chicago maybe than Mike McCarthy is down in Dallas, but McCarthy has the job at this point. I was just making a joke.
I like that interim coach, but you guys are rough down there. I don't know if I can cover a pro team in Chicago, man. I'm going to have to be fired immediately. Wow. Good stuff down there, man. Good stuff. I would say McCarthy is the fans are indifferent on McCarthy because, they as you just said, they would love to have Sean Payton. But I think Jerry likes Dan Quinn as well. So I don't know. It's a two-man race.
And we just had the experience on Monday night here in Chicago watching quarterbacks flip-flop during a game for the New England Patriots. And I'm just wondering, with the, I'll call it a roller coaster ride that Cowboys tend to go on with Dak Prescott. There's no doubt the Cowboys are fully invested in Dak, but how much of a rumbling began with the Cooper Rush experience, and whether or not folks kind of think like, hey, maybe we had something there?
Anybody who said that, oh, man, we got something there with Cooper Rush was uneducated and probably needed to stop watching football. if you watch the games with any kind of common sense, you could tell that Dak Prescott's better than Cooper Rush. What the Cowboys did when Cooper Rush was the starting quarterback was they started to run the football a lot more, and their defense became the doomsday defense. As you guys know, the Cowboys lead the NFL in sacks. They got this kid named Micah Parsons who's just wrecking havoc all over the league, and they created turnovers. So their defense has really been the catalyst, regardless of who's the starting quarterback. But when you look at the skill set, it's obvious that they're a better team with Dak Prescott than they are with Cooper Rush.
All right, Calvin, we're getting to that time of the year when the injury bug is hitting some of these teams, and it looks like a big loss for the Cowboys is Ezekiel Elliott. How much is that going to hurt him, not having him this game potentially? It sounds like he's out. And then some of the other injuries with this team, how much is it going to hurt them as well?
Well, yeah, not having Zeke today is going to hurt them. Tony Pollard's probably going to get the start. Everyone looks at Pollard as a guy who runs off the tackle and someone who can throw the ball to in the backfield. But the biggest thing they're going to miss by not having Zeke is the pass protection. Tony Pollard is an average, or to be honest, below average pass protector, and that's probably one of the main reasons why Zeke Elliott gets a lot of snaps and games, because the 3rd and 11, you need someone to protect Dak Prescott or Cooper Rush, whoever the hell you got back there, and that's what Zeke does. Dalton Schultz, the starting tight end, he's supposed to play today. He's been messed up with the knee, sprained knee ligament. He should be okay. I would say he's about 75%. One of the things the Cowboys have to do with him is get him the ball early to get this offense moving down the field. But other than those two guys, everybody else is okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Malik Hooker, one of the starting safeties, he got a hamstring injury. Malik's going to do some pregame stuff. And if he can get through the pregame, he'll probably play against Chicago.
And Micah Parsons' shoulder isn't a big deal. I know he's limited in practice this week. The formula, at least, has been to this point to run at him. And if the Bears are going to run and he has a sore shoulder, maybe that is an aid to them. Although, God knows, don't ever think he's not going to catch it from behind. That guy's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I was told the shoulder is not much of a problem. Mike has been nicked up quite a few times throughout the course of the season. I think he had a knee, he had a toe, a groin. Now he's got a shoulder. It's football. It happens. You got to play through it, and he's fine. I would agree with you. Yeah, the teams try to run at Micah. Sometimes teams try to force Micah not to do anything. That's what Philly did when they played him in week 4. Was that they try to neutralize him by saying, we're going to run at you and make you make a decision. Either you get our quarterback or you get the runner or you get a receiver or you get somebody. And then he's like forced to think a little bit more, and then you make a play right behind him. So it'll be interesting to see what Chicago does against them today.
And some of those RPO elements, and it's a bit newer to the Bears offense here. You referenced Philly doing it against the Cowboys, some QB run that Baltimore used as well. So the Bears offense with Luke Getsy running the show kind of continues to evolve with Justin Fields at QB. When you think of, you mentioned the Philly game, you think of the Ravens game, what were some of those elements of just kind of leaving Micah Parsons unblocked at times and making him a bit indecisive? How big of a deal did that turn out to prove to be for the Cowboys defense?
Well, the Eagles ended up winning that game, so that tells you that it kind of worked. They ran the same play twice at Micah Parsons in that back-to-back series, and that kind of, they got touchdowns out of it. The other thing is, if you can neutralize Micah Parsons and you force guys like Dorrance Armstrong and DeMarcus Lawrence, the other pass rushers, to make plays for you. And they're not as dynamic as Micah Parsons, let's be honest. If there's one issue that I have with the Cowboys defense, it's their pass coverage. Trayvon Diggs is a fantastic corner, but there are times where he will get beat. And if you can get a corner behind him or in front of him where you think he can get some yards, you better take advantage of it. And that's where you got to have a good quarterback in the passing game that can connect with the receiver. But if you can neutralize that with Trayvon Diggs, you can probably get some things going in the passing game. As you guys know, the Cowboys' running defense is just average at best. So when you have Micah Parsons back there, healthy, fully healthy, which he almost is, to be honest with you, then you can kind of maybe slow down a little bit.
Sorry about that. I got to put the mic on there. I don't even know what I'm doing.
Sorry.
All right, so you're talking about.
You were done with me. I thought you were firing me like Mike McCarthy. I was done. I mean, Jerry Jones on the line. What's going on?
You talked about that run defense for the Cowboys. You picked up Jonathan Hankins. How much of a difference is he going to make for this already darn good defense? Is it going to be that much of a help up front to maybe solidify this to being a super, the best defense in the NFL?
I like the move. He's a big guy. He fits what Dan Quinn wants in his defensive line. Big wide bodies in the middle of that defensive line. That's something that you really need if you're going to stop the run. He's been around a long time. He's played with the Giants. Obviously, he's in Vegas. Been in the league 10 years. So he's a veteran. He knows what to do. I expect him to play today. I don't know. The Cowboys have a rotation on their interior defensive lineman, so I would expect him to get maybe 10 or 12 snaps this afternoon. But, yeah, that's a big plus for them. Neville Gallimore, who was like a third-round pick a couple of years ago, he's a little bit too undersized. He gets pushed around a little bit. So putting Hankins back there should solidify something in the run defense. We'll see, but that's what the goal is right now.
Pregame is presented by Bet Rivers, the official sports book of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers app today. Calvin, I'm just curious, when you think about the fact that Fields has been sacked 27 times and Dallas is the best pass rush in the league with 29 sacks, do they look at this? Do they say to themselves, we got to use Donovan Wilson as a spy, or do they say, pin your ears back and go get this guy? What's the mentality?
Yeah, the Cowboys didn't have a spy when they played the Eagles and they took on Jalen Hurts. And I don't know if they'll use a spy against this kid this afternoon. They use C.J. Goodwin, who is like one of their best special teams guys. He simulated the Bears quarterback, Justin Fields. Discombobulated because I'm driving to the game and someone just cut me off. I think the problem.
Give him the finger.
Cowboys don't spot. The Cowboys don't spot quarterbacks. That's not what they do. They just like to, as you said, they pin their ears back and they just get after it. J'Ron Curse, who's like the slash safety linebacker, he's a guy who will cover linebacker, excuse me, cover tight end and running backs out of the backfield. He's a guy that you could possibly see. Whenever your boy moves out of the pocket, boom, he'll go get him. That's one of those guys. Donovan Wilson, someone that likes to blitz off the edge, and he's also a good run stopper. You'll see him up in the box a little bit. So there's a lot of different ways they can go about it without, quote-unquote, spying the quarterback. But for the most part, Dallas just goes after you and blitzes. They like to use a lot of stunts to kind of throw you off a little bit. DeMarcus Lawrence had a really good conversation with me the other day, and he said, we got to be disciplined in our rush lane. I said, what does that mean? And he said, well, there's six lanes. So if we're all disciplined in our rush lanes, we don't need to spy anybody. If a quarterback gets out of the pocket, someone's going to be right there, especially the interior of the line.
Calvin Watkins covers the Dallas Cowboys for the Dallas Morning News. Our guest here on the Bears pregame show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You can find Calvin on Twitter at Calvin Watkins. I'd love if you could maybe give a bit of a history lesson here, because it feels like there's some elements with Dallas that maybe the Bears or Bears fans could benefit from. There's talk in Chicago of the Bears maybe moving out of Chicago, going up to Arlington. Just the Cowboys went to Arlington, Texas, and left Dallas itself. What were the reactions from Cowboys fans? I've found it to be, here in Chicago, surprisingly positive about the notion the Bears may move out of the city and go up to Arlington Heights here in Chicago. And you've got one of the most forward-facing and public media-addressing owners in all of professional sports. And I would imagine Jerry Jones was fairly fairly public as that plan was taking place. Can you take us back to that time, what that was like?
Yeah, the Cowboys at the time, they were playing in Irving, Texas, which is another little suburb of Dallas. There was talk about Cowboys possibly moving to a section of the city, downtown Dallas, called Fair Park. And that's where the Cotton Bowl is. And so the city of Dallas was like, hey, why don't you come down here to Fair Park? But the mayor at the time, Laura Miller, wasn't a big proponent of sports franchises getting whatever they want. When she was a city council member, she vetoed the city of Dallas getting a new basketball arena for the hockey and basketball team. But the mayor at that particular time, Ron Kurth, just said, you just need to be quiet, and got the deal done. So now that Laura Miller was the mayor, Jerry Jones wanted nothing to do with her because he knew of her past history. And the city of Arlington, which is where the Rangers, Texas Rangers baseball team play, they had a deal, and they had great, and they had all kinds of land. And the voters approved a bond, in essence, and a hotel tax increase for the Cowboys to move to Arlington. And it was close to the baseball stadium. So Jerry was like, all right, where's the money at? And the money was in Arlington, so that's where he went. The people in Dallas, they don't really so much blame Jerry as much as they blame the former mayor at the time, the deal. But in reality, I think Jerry Jones was all about moving to Arlington. As you guys know, these NFL owners, they're going to do whatever they want, wherever the money is. And if the money's in Arlington, Illinois, which I think is, what, 45 minutes from Chicago, they're going to go. Unless the city can say, hey, we'll give you $800 million, you can put it right here. Then they'll change their minds. But for the most part, people here, they blame, I guess, the politicians for the Cowboys moving to the suburbs.
Kelvin, thanks so much. We appreciate all your insight. I imagine you picked Dallas. Who'd you pick for the game?
I picked Dallas. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Go Cowboys.
Will they cover? Will they cover? Will they cover the 9.5, though?
I had Chicago, man. I had Chicago on that. You gotta make your money. You gotta pick the Bears, man. You gotta pick the Bears.
Gotcha.
Okay. Great stuff, Kelvin. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too, thanks, buddy. Calvin. Enjoy the game. That's Kelvin Watkins, the Dallas Morning News. We've got to get into some of that stuff. It's interesting to think about what Dan Quinn will do to. I mean, if they don't care what Justin Fields does, that is huge for the Bears. And I think you would imagine that if nothing else, what happened on Monday night would have gotten the attention of the coaches. We'll talk about that idea when we return here on the pregame show on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
But I think Fields is dynamic. I mean, I was so impressed with them Monday night. I thought they did a really nice job coming out of their bye week. You know, they hit some scheme runs, you know, in the game against New England. So, and that's what you really pay attention to. He can make plays. He's a playmaker. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, more Jalen Hurts is probably a good comparable, and you know, just the way they play and really the stress that they put on you, your run defense, with the quarterback emphasis. I mean, he's, you know, we're treating him as a primary ball carrier, and you have to, because he can change the game.
It's the pregame show on the score. We've got Anthony Herron, we've got Patrick Manley, and we've got some audio there from Mike McCarthy, who is the head coach in Dallas for now. And Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator, is more popular in Dallas than Mike McCarthy. And, you know, we know that there's all sorts of rumors about Sean Payton. But at any rate, it's interesting to hear him call him their primary ball carrier and to talk about how you have to handle that, because Calvin is telling us that the players themselves don't seem overly impressed or worried. They've struggled in their run defense, Dallas has, and you know, the Bears have an identity. You would imagine they'll stay with their identity. Do you believe that they will use a spy at some point here, especially if the Bears, as we were told earlier in the week by the playmaker Michael Irvin, they should just run every play, run in the first quarter, punch them in the mouth, tell them they're going to have a game. I like that audio.
I don't know that it'll go completely to the point of a a consistent spy. Like, frequently when you think of the term spy, it's a defender who could be a part of the pass rush, someone from the front seven who ends up occupying the box, basically, kind of being back there behind the defensive front, around the interior, within the tackle box somewhere, and just waiting to see if the quarterback leaks out, more up the middle somewhere, where a lot of opponents before the Monday night game, the biggest run threat that people had game planned for with Justin Fields was on the bootleg action, Justin Fields out to the edge. And the way you tend to game plan these things is you try to figure out, because all quarterbacks, even, you think of a guy like Tom Brady, most quarterbacks have a particular direction that they're just most comfortable, most frequently escape in. Are you a vertical escape guy? Are you a lateral escape guy? Which gap do you tend to climb the pocket towards or move the pocket laterally in either direction? Justin Fields' most natural gear is to be a lateral escape guy. Sometimes it's keeping his eyes down the field. Sometimes it's that reverse pivot where he kind of, whether it is a called bootleg action or if he begins the play trying to pass from within the pocket and then he reverse pivots and starts running sideways. He's starting to get better and more frequent with climbing the pocket vertically while keeping his eyes down the field. So I would imagine that's a part of the Cowboys' game plan, is even just recognizing that. But defenses up to this point have been trying to make sure Justin Fields doesn't get to the edge, doesn't get outside the pocket. And a spy, could be effective based off of what we saw from last week's game plan. The issue is, if your responsibility within a defense is to be the spy, then you're not taking an aggressive charge off the ball into a block. And so if the Bears are running the ball with frequency, with volume, with success against this Cowboys defense, this fast-flowing Cowboys defense that hunts the ball really well from the backside, but if you run it at them, people have had success in doing that, then it does make it makes it less likely, and it can make it less effective to have a spy there who's thinking, all right, when I come off the ball, I'm kind of passive in my charge because I'm essentially going to work backwards and laterally looking for the quarterback in either direction. So it is a little bit of a chess match, especially when you have the called run element of the Bears offense that became a bigger deal on Monday night.
Yeah, and I also think just with their alignment, sometimes with Micah Parsons playing middle linebacker, not the edge rusher, that he's kind of a natural spy, right? Just because he's there and such a darn good athlete that if they are in regular down and distance where, the Bears will pass, he's sitting back there as middle linebacker sample or whatever, the middle linebacker position, that he is kind of a natural spy. So I don't think they have to game plan for that or scheme for that. I think they already have that kind of in their defense with Micah Parsons, just who he is when he does line up at linebacker. So, yeah, we'll see what they do, but I don't expect to put a spy out there for this game.
And I'll say this too, Mully, because Bill Belichick going into last week's game, he made a lot of comments.
Yeah.
The 7 minute clip about him talking about everything with the Bears, a lot of that chunk of that was him talking about the athleticism, the explosive abilities of Justin Fields. And then even during the week leading into the game, he was talking about the explosive athletic ability, the running, the playmaking of Justin Fields. It's one thing to game plan for it. It's another thing to be able to stop it, because when you have a QB who can do those things with his legs and the blocking picks it up, then that's why, like we were talking about earlier in the show, it's still important for the Bears to have that as a segment of the offense, because it is that additional wrinkle, that additional blocking surface is very difficult for defenses to account for.
So Michael Judon went against Larry Borum for most of that game, the New England game. He finished with 2.5 sacks. He had 3 QB hits, and I believe he had a batted pass. He had a heck of a game. Micah Parsons is a better player. And, you think about how good Parsons is and who's going to stop him. Well, it's not going to be Larry Borum. Larry Borum will miss the game. He's in concussion protocol. He had a bad game last week, and apparently, he was concussed during it. So maybe there's a reason for that. One of the few Bears, by the way, that had a bad game. But he's out. So now they were asked about it. I think Luke Getsy said on Thursday, he was very reluctant to be forthcoming about who will start in his place. I would imagine it's Riley Reiff. But by the way, Lucas Patrick is back on, or now is on IR with a toe injury suffered during that game. So Sam Mustipher, who had started, is back, and they've already got two changes on the offensive line. Well, they're going to have three now. And I don't know. I don't know that anybody is really going to be able to block Micah Parsons, but I do think Riley Reiff, at least as an experienced player, makes sense to me. Getsy was asked if Alex Leatherwood would be a guy they'd consider, and he kind of deflected the question. Leatherwood is up and capable. I heard Reiff practiced and got all the reps, but what would you do in that situation? Wouldn't you go for the veteran guy, and how will that impact whatever game plan they put together? Three different changes on the offensive line.
Well, my biggest question is, how healthy is Riley Reiff? Because if he is that good or is that healthy, to me, he should have been out there already over Braxton Jones or Larry Borum. Or are they just saying, you know, screw it, we're truly going to go out there with these young guys and let them develop? So my question is, how healthy is he? Can he play the entire game? And then the other one is Alex Leatherwood. What's he like coming off mono? How well does he know this offense? And the other thing, Luke Getsy didn't speak. Normally when a guy is ready or you feel comfortable, they'll just say, yes, he's ready, we can throw him out there right now. And he didn't sound that way about Alex Leatherwood. So I'm nervous about this, but I don't think the game plan changes at all. I think obviously the Bears' strength is running the ball. So I think if you put Riley Reiff in there, you can still run the ball. I'm not sure as well, because Larry Borum and Tevin Jenkins in the run game, when they're double-teaming guys, they move a lot of humans. They are very powerful. So I don't know how good Riley Reiff will be at doing that, but I think it could it'll be a little drop-off, I think. But you also have to make sure with this game plan and this defense you're going against with Micah Parsons and their great pass rushes to Marcus Lawrence, the other guy, Armstrong, has 5 or 6 sacks, that you can't get behind the chains. You have to have no negative plays. You have to have positive runs. You have to limit it to third and short so you can, you know, run your play action passes and things like that to help this offensive line. So they are behind it. Yes, they've got a lot of injuries. They've been behind it all year in pass protection just with the talent level they have, but I'm interested to see how healthy Riley Reiff is.
It's hard on the O-line, man, when you're hoping to establish continuity and you want to get young guys reps, but then you have so many of them in and out of the lineup. And obviously, you know, Cody Whitehair's had plenty of reps, no more reps than anyone on this group in the time he's been a Chicago Bear. But, you know, you lose him and you bring in Lucas Patrick and he's been in and out because of the hand and now he's out for an extended period. And like you referenced, Larry Borum being out also. It is hard to establish something where continuity is so key to the offensive line. But we are at least seeing a scheme that's being established here, a personality that's already been established for the way that Luke Getsy and Matt Eberflus want this offense to run. And so, you know, being run heavy is part of it, and I'm going to watch this closer. I think, you know, I'll be interested to hear, you know, what you guys think about it in the post game. And folks, listen to us right now, pay attention to the ball handling in the backfield. It was an underappreciated aspect of last week's game and some of the run success that was there. When you're seeing a lot of jet sweep action and mesh point manipulation, you know, like with the RPO game and with some zone read looks, there's a lot on the quarterback. There are situations where he is truly reading that. There are other situations where he needs to be a great performer and show the mesh point for an extended period of time. That draws a defense in one direction before he pulls it. Maybe he'll pull it to become a ball carrier. Maybe there's an aspect here where I would hope today we'll even see it get to the point where once he pulls it from the mesh and Justin Fields keeps the ball, where there's some receiving elements. You know, maybe he can, you know, hit someone in the flat after he pulls it because some other speedy receiver is coming across the face. You know, you show it to David Montgomery here at the mesh. You draw the defense in a bit. Then Justin Fields pulls it, sprints sideways, and, oh, look, here's Cole Kmet. Or, wow, look at Velus Jones out there in open space. There's some things you can build off of now that there's more RPO, more zone read, and some of the ball handling that we saw in last week's game. That can aid, even if your offensive line, if you don't necessarily think Riley Reiff is athletic enough to do some of the things that we've seen Braxton Jones and Larry Borum doing and, you know, hitting the first level, sprinting up to the second level, and some of these highlight blocks of Tevin Jenkins, you know, up in space. That's probably not Riley Reiff at this point in his career, but, you know, you can still have the defense, the aggressive, speedy Cowboy defense over pursue with outstanding ball handling in the backfield. I would imagine that'll be something that'll be key in the Bears' game plan today.
Anthony, that's a great point, because I went back and watched Jalen Hurts, and he is excellent at that. So he really hurt the Cowboys and their aggressiveness with that ball handling and riding that mesh point. And you're exactly right. The jet sweeps and all that stuff, you're seeing Micah Parsons run up almost into the line and get washed in there. And then he'd hit, you know, actually hit him a couple over the top a couple times, and also Michael Parsons is so athletic he was able to run back and tip a couple passes right. as well. But it does hurt the other players, not just Michael. I mean, but it was yeah. it was impressive, and that's a great point to see if Justin Fields can do that this week.
All right. Hey, Bears fans, introducing the new Zing Zang Bloody Mary canned cocktails. You can go get them right now. You should have them on hand. Premium vodka already in the can. They're always ready. Perfect for game day tailgates. Please Zing Zang responsibly. We should probably talk about Micah Parsons and revisit the draft decisions that were made when both he and Justin Fields came out. They went 11 and 12th. We'll do that next. We'll discuss this and break down the game. You're listening to the pregame show on The Score.